This is William Fink, and this is the Christogenia Open Forum. It is Monday, November 1st, 2010. I don't believe how fast this year is going by. That was Belfast Polka by Celtic Thunder. And that was in honor of Martin Winstead, Sweeber Nigger. I'll be talking a little bit more about him later. Today, I'm going to talk for a little while about race in Europe, and what is white. You know, I don't have a horse in this pony. My own ancestors are from Britain and Rhineland in Germany, and they all have fair skin and blue eyes and light brown hair or reddish brown hair and blonde hair, and that's my point. The white race has a variety of features, within certain expected limitations, of course, and for that reason, we're unlike all the other races. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. It is Agricola, which was written about his father-in-law, who was a Roman, the governor of Roman Britain for about 10 years in the first century A.D. Historius Tacitus wrote the following. Who the first inhabitants of Britain were, whether natives or immigrants, is open to question. One must remember that we are dealing with barbarians. Their physical characteristics vary, and the variation is suggestive. Reddish hair and large limbs, the Caledonians proclaim a German origin. Swarthy faces of the Silures, the tendency of their hair to curl, and the fact that Spain lies opposite, all lead one to believe that Spaniards crossed in ancient times and occupied that part of the country. So we see that Tacitus that imagines the Spaniards to generally have a tendency of their hair to curl, and somewhat darker faces than... He was a Roman, right? Peoples nearest to the Gauls likewise resemble them. Of course, Tacitus... Now, the Gauls were not, as we'll see from Strabo, the ideal blonde, tall Nordic types that we might envision contrasted to the Spaniards. We'll see that in a little while from Strabo. The peoples nearest to the Gauls likewise resemble them. Of course, Tacitus was not properly a historian, for he was educated in the classical histories and was apparently... He was not educated, I'm sorry, in the classical histories and was apparently ignorant of, or perhaps simply ignored, the accounts of both the Phoenicians and the Trojans in Britain, although it is not probable that all of the early Britons are derived from these alone. Rather, Tacitus was a chronicler of his own times, in both the Agricola and his account of the tribes of Germany, the Germania, have been esteemed as works of great value for many centuries. That paragraph is basically from my paper at Christigenia, Classical Records in German Origins, Part 6, Who Are the English? In his Annals of Rome, we've just seen that Tacitus describes the Silures as a naturally fierce people, and he discusses the valor of their chieftain, Caradoc, who is better known by his Latin name, Caractacus. He is famous for a speech attributed to him by Tacitus, appealing to Roman clemency and justice, after he was captured, having been betrayed by the infamous Cartimandua. Caractacus was reportedly freed, but kept in Rome until the Romans secured their victory over the British tribes that he was the chieftain of. Yet to many Israel identity students, Caractacus may be famous for even more than that, for it is his home in Rome, Palatium Britannicum, the Apostle Paul is supposed to have stayed during the time of his own sojourn in Rome. Now, I can't say that Paul knew Caractacus, because I would estimate that there were probably some 15 years between Caractacus's capture and Paul's captivity. However, the evidence of a connection between Paul and this household in Rome seems fairly reliable. Clifton has written more than one paper on the topic, and they're on his website. The Iberians of Tacitus, who he said generally had swarthy faces and a tendency of their hair to curl, that's far from describing them as kinky-haired, right? These Iberians of Tacitus, it is remarked by Strabo, were recognized as having been related to the Iberians of the Caucasus Mountains. Certainly, certain of them were said by Strabo to, quote, make use of an alphabet and to possess records of their ancient history, poems and laws written in verse that are 6,000 years old. So we see that while Tacitus imagined the Iberians, along with the tribes who are known today, for the most part, as the Welsh, who have had swarthy faces and curly hair, we certainly cannot imagine that they were black, and we can't even imagine that they were mixed. There's no historical basis for that whatsoever. They were simply what the Germans would call brunettes, as I will discuss shortly. I'm going to quote a line from Euripides, Andromache, from line 881. Andromache is the play is situated in Thessaly, and we have a Thessalian chorus leader who says, look, here comes a foreigner, a man of different hue from ourselves, hastening towards us with speedy step. Now, that's the only line I'm going to quote, and that's enough. Thessalians, they had descended primarily from Phoenicians and also from Danan Greeks and Dorian Greeks, because Thessaly is a big area and there were a lot of city-states in it. It's the northern part of what we know as Greece that would lie in between Argos and the Peloponnesus, and to the south, and Macedonia and Thrace to the north. Thessaly would be the main large part of the continental part of Greece. Now, this one line in this play tells me that the 5th century B.C. Greek poet Euripides had accounted the Thessalians to have a different hue or skin tone from the Danans, because the man being spoken of, who is of a different hue from the Thessalians, is Orestes, and Orestes is the son of Agamemnon, the great chief of the Danans who destroyed Troy. Throughout the Iliad, Agamemnon included, and the Danans were described as mostly having reddish hair and ivory skin. Thessalians were later recognized by Strabo and Diodorus Siculus as Greeks, there's no doubt. They were just of a different tribe from the Danans. And we see that they had, according to Euripides, a somewhat different hue or skin tone. That there's no reason to believe that any of these people are not white. And this is over 1,500 years before a Turk or an Arab ever came near Greece. Solomon the king had ivory skin. He had raven hair. Hector, the prince of Troy, an Arian of Arians, was also described in the Iliad as having had raven hair. Alexander the Great, the Macedonian. If you look at all the ancient paintings of him, many of them dating back to the 1st and 2nd centuries B.C., still about 1,200 years before a Greek or before a Turk or an Arab came near Greece, Alexander the Great was always depicted as having brown hair and brown eyes. While surely the Greeks often mentioned blonde hair and red hair and gray eyes, they didn't all have those features, or there wouldn't have been much point in mentioning them. Strabo told us that the Britons were tall like the Germans, but they had much darker hair, generally. He also told us that the Gauls, of what we now know as Germany, they were called Germans by the Romans from the 1st century B.C., because they were esteemed to be taller and fairer and more yellow-haired than the Gauls of what we now know as France, even though to Greek and Roman alike, the French Gallic tribes and the German Gallic tribes were always considered to be the same general race. Here I'm going to make a quote from a paper I read on a program 3 weeks ago from Benjamin Franklin. In the midst of his imaginative imperialism, he had a touch of Anglo-Saxon insularity. This is Carl Van Doren speaking, I'm sorry. And in the first edition of his Increase of Mankind, he questioned the admission of any but Englishmen to the colonies. And Franklin says, quote, "Why should the Palatine Boers, meaning the Germans, be suffered to swarm into our settlements, and by herding together establish their language and manners to the exclusion of ours," meaning the English. "Why should Pennsylvania, founded by the English, become a colony of aliens," meaning the Germans, "who will shortly be so numerous as to Germanize us instead of our Anglifying them?" Franklin was at the time resentful of the Pennsylvania Germans, who he thought were politically backward and intractable, and economically below English standards. And Doran says, but he ended his remarks, "though with bad ethnology, yet with better temper." Quote, "The number of purely white people in the world is proportionally small, very small. All Africa is black or tawny. Asia, chiefly tawny. America, exclusive of the newcomers," by which he means the colonists, right? "Wholly so. And in Europe, the Spaniards, Italians, French, Russians, and Swedes are generally of what we call a swarthy complexion, as are the Germans also, the Saxons only excepted, who with the English make the principal body of white people on the face of the earth." So Benjamin Franklin is calling Spaniards, Italians, French, Russians, and Swedes, Arnold Lindstedt, non-white. That makes you a Sweber nigger. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but he deserves the term. Pow! Why increase... I'm skipping ahead. I want to get this whole thing in. "I could wish their numbers," meaning those white people, the Germans and the Saxon Germans and the English, right? "I could wish their numbers were increased. And while we are, as I may call it, scouring our planet by clearing America of woods and so making this side of our globe reflect a brighter light to the inhabitants in Mars or Venus, why should we, in the sight of superior beings, darken its people?" Swedes. Why increase the sons of Africa by planting them in America, whereby we have so fair an opportunity by excluding all blacks and tawnies of increasing the lovely red and white? But perhaps I am partial to the complexion of my country. Such kind of partiality is natural to mankind. I read that on the first segment of my 10-10-10 presentation, and I'm exaggerating my play on Franklin's comments concerning the Spaniards, Italians, French, Russians, and Swedes, but some people deserve the title Sweeber Nigger. Okay, I'm going to discuss some things off the cuff. There's a difference between blonde people. Hello. I don't know where I left off. I'm sorry. I don't know how I changed channels. I have no idea. It's a mystery. Oh no, I've been raptured. Okay. Where do I take it from? Because the recording changed channels with me. That's okay. I think that you heard my comments on the Sweeber Niggers, right? Now, I'm going to quote from Franklin. The number of purely white people in the world is proportionally very small. All Africa is black and or tawny. Asia chiefly tawny. America, exclusive of the newcomers, meaning the colonists, wholly so. And in Europe, the Spaniards, Italians, French, Russians, and Swedes are generally of what we call a swarthy complexion, as are the Germans also, the Saxons only excepted, who with the English make the principal body of white people on the face of the earth. So Benjamin Franklin is saying that only German Saxons, or Saxon Germans, which doesn't include all Germans, it doesn't include the Germans of the Sudetenland, the Austrians, the Prussians, they're generally not considered Saxons, Avarians. Franklin's including the Saxons of northwestern Germany, but that's where most of the Saxons are concentrated, and the English alone as white, and saying that the Spaniards, Italians, French, Russians, and Swedes are generally what we would call swarthy. So that makes Martin Lindstedt a Sweeber Nigger, title that he deserves, according to Benjamin Franklin. I'm only exaggerating that because I have to explain a difference which I don't think Franklin recognized. Differences between blonde and brawn, or blonde and brunette. Even the Germanic Eddas, Snorri's Eddas, mention swarthy-skinned, but still Germanic, people. Anthropologists in the 1800s attempted to classify the tribes who fell mostly into the brunette category as Alpines, as opposed to Nordics, who fell mostly into the blonde category. But not all Nordics are blondes, and not all Alpines are properly brunettes. The Bible really tells us that they all came from the same place. And even though we don't all meet the Aryan blonde ideal, that doesn't mean that we aren't white. You know, while I cannot negotiate the fact that no Arab is white, and I've asserted that over and over in my writing and in my speech, there is little historic evidence for Arabs in southern Germany or northern Italy, where there are many people, or even northern Spain and France, northern France, where many people of what may be called an Alpine stock happen to reside. There are also brunettes in Britain, Scotland, Ireland, and elsewhere, right alongside the blondes. Are these people not white? I've met Scots, pure-blooded Irishmen, who were as brunette or as tan as we might consider a lot of northern Italians. And likewise with the Swiss. And yes, Sean Connery, Eighth Day Woman, is a very good example. Are these people not white? There's no historical evidence to discount brunettes from being white. There's absolutely no evidence that all brunettes are mixed, even though some surely are. There are a lot of southern Spaniards, Portuguese, and people from central and southern Italy who are indeed mixed, who are Arabs. And those people I would exclude immediately. But very often, they're very difficult to tell apart. Sometimes it's very hard to distinguish between an Alpine and a light-skinned Arab. That's just the way it is. I've known many modern-day Lebanese people and Jordanian people who have enough white blood in them, because that's what an Arab is, right? who could pass for white, or at least try to pass themselves off as white. So what if we can't tell the difference? That's why we have the gospel. We are told that we should know them, meaning the mixed races and the Arab races, because all Arabs are part Canaanite. The gospel tells us that we should know them by their fruits. We cannot toss out the wheat with the tares, period. That is not our commission. Yahshua Christ tells us that he alone will determine when to do that. Peter warns us that the satanic devils will move in to feast with us, 2 Peter 2:12. And let me tell you something, there's just as many satanic devils with pink skin and blonde hair as there are with tan skin and brown hair. That's just the way it is. There's a lot of Khazar Jews that look whiter than the Sweber nigger. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 11:27, those who attempt to partake with us who are not worthy, they condemn themselves for the murder of Christ. Read my translation, 1 Corinthians 11. For my part, I would not throw out the wheat with the tares. So I will have patience, and if they are indeed tares, their fruits will expose them. That's what we have to go on. That's the scripture. We separate ourselves from the obvious devils and bastards, and have patience for those with those whom we are not entirely sure of. That's just the way it is. Since no man in this modern world can guarantee his own racial purity, we have only the gospel to use as our measure. This is not an excuse. It is scripture. It's easy to get rid of the obvious ones, and a lot of us might be tares and not even know it. And that's just the way it is. So, but I guarantee that to anybody that Eli or Brian or anyone else is somehow definitely white, I can't even guarantee that anyone is definitely white, including myself. That's just the way it is. I'm going to answer another accusation. Have I hidden anything, as the Sweber nigger accuses me of doing? Let me tell you something. There have been pictures of Sword Brethren on the Christogenia Forum, everybody to see, for 14 months now, hiding in plain sight. And not one single person has said a damned word about them. I know that Martin Lindstench has seen them, and he has never said anything about them. I know he's seen them, because he doesn't miss a thing on that forum. I know he's seen them, because we've caught him a few times with two or three browsers open at once, until we caught him one last time, and Victor and brought it to my attention, and I banned his ass on Saturday. Am I, as Martin Lindstench accuses me, guilty of bringing in, quote-unquote, anyone who is unworthy of the kingdom? First, I would ask this. Bringing into what? Here is a guy who sees Christian identity as a club rather than as a conviction. That's why he professes it and he does not practice it. I cannot claim to have the key to the kingdom. Only Yahshua Christ has the key to the kingdom. We can all be discerning to a point, and we have to be. But eventually, only Yahshua will decide who makes it and who doesn't. I think that Martin Lindstench, the Sweber nigger, better worry about his own vile, disgusting ass and not about the next guys. Even though, to me, he is obviously more interested in the next guys, not as a pastor. You know, it may have been a good thing that Eli went on Lindstedt's program last night. I personally, I wouldn't give him the credibility. He's a nothing, he's a nobody. If it weren't for the people that listen to Eli's programs going to see what Lindstedt had to say about us, he wouldn't have anybody listening to him. Period. He might have two people in his forum. That would be it. That's all he deserves. I believe that he's purposely out to destroy Christian identity and discredit Christian identity. That's been his modus operandi for a year now. He has not produced one good work. He has not produced one work of scholarship. He has not produced one sermon without a mouthful of curses and rumor-mongering and slander and blasphemy. He plays John Britton like a fiddle. plays John Britton because he needs the credibility of John Britton's name, supposedly. And I'm sure, I've read some of Newman Britton's sermons, that Newman Britton wouldn't have a damn thing to do with a vile, disgusting pig like Martin Lindstedt. And all John Britton's doing hanging out with Martin Lindstedt is slandering his uncle's good name. Period. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm done. If anybody wants to talk about anything else, please do so, because this is an open forum. And we can't have an open forum without people who are willing to engage in a discussion. So if anybody would like to talk, please request talk power on your right click your name and request to talk, and I'll turn your microphone on. Don't all rush at once now. I'll have to start singing like Lindstedt. No, I won't do that. I'm glad Eli went on his program last night and gave him a piece of his mind, but I know that it's going to go nowhere. Lindstedt's never going to repent. He's never going to change his ways. He's a vile, disgusting man, and that's where it's going to end. Okay, I guess nobody wants to say anything. I can't have an open forum unless somebody wants to say something. Maybe I'm talking in the wrong channel again. Hello, Gerald. I'm glad somebody doesn't have stage fright.
Well, I'm not going to say a lot because I've already talked too much on some of these later programs, but I'm glad to see you do what you did tonight, and I think it was an excellent presentation, because, you know, not that that Sword Brother needs anyone to take up for him, but that boy is just as white, I think, as I am. He spent 2 weeks in my home, and I have lots of pictures of him that we took at Bible study and whatnot. I won't spread those around because it wouldn't be fair to him to do that. But I certainly vouch for the fact that I believe that boy is an Israelite through and through. And it angers me to see him being humiliated, talked about like this, and by the likes of Lindstedt. And if anybody looks at the picture of Stead, I'm thinking of a squealing pig out of Deliverance. That's about the best I can describe it.
And, well, you know,
I take personal offense. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, I could talk about racial issues and Europe at great length. And I think I said just enough to prove my point. There are white Europeans with tan skin and brown hair. Now, I can't guarantee 100%. That Sword Brethren is one of them, but because sometimes they're very difficult to tell apart, a brunette from an Arab, but we have to let one's works show one's worth. That's what we're told. That's the scripture. Brian has produced a lot of good work. Martin Lindstedt, the Sweeber nigger, hasn't produced any. How could he possibly say anything bad about Brian? I don't get it. But unless he wanted to be an agent provocateur, unless he wanted in a fleshly manner to somehow get even for Brian's having slapped him around verbally so many times, and Russell Walker likewise, well, then that's the only reason why they're making any accusation. Because they're bitter, disgusting men. There's no doubt in my mind that that's what they are. And that's what Jews do. They love to find something to pick on. They have to find something to pick on in a group to divide it and to splinter it and to discredit it. That's what Jews do.
Yeah. Bill, I think that whoever did Zogbots on both Lindstedt and Troublemaker did an admirable job. I don't know how it could have been nailed any better and explained any better in the wordage that's there. And especially quoting Hitler out of Mein Kampf, comparing it to Troublemaker and his activities. It's right out of the book. And whoever did that did a masterful job, and they continue.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you feel that way, because I read the site and I thought it was all I can say is I thought it was perfectly true, fair, and objective. I'm exaggerating a little, but that's exactly what I thought about Zogbots.com. Perfectly true, fair, and objective.
Well, it's possible you might, you know, there might be some form entries there. Who knows? Anyway, I'm sure they're going to have a similar viewpoint. You know, Athena needs to be, she needs to, I know she's an 86-year-old woman, but anybody that acts the way she does and says the nasty, filthy things that she says deserves the same treatment.
Well, you know, Athena had accused me of being a Jew before I got out of prison. She never saw me, and I saw the emails. Don Brown sent me the emails between Athena, Russell Walker, and Judy Nipps while I was in prison. And I read their emails because Don printed them for me. So I knew all about these clowns before I got out of prison. And if a woman, I don't care how old she is, if a woman wants to run her mouth in the public square, then she has to take the tomatoes. And as far as I'm concerned, she's just a stinking old whore. That's all she is, and I have nothing for her. There is no doubt in my mind. And she's a Greek, so I would like to see pictures of her. Troublemaker's been kicking it with her for at least 15 years. I'd like to see pictures of her. The Greek goddess of wisdom. I'll bet she's a swarthy old Turkish whore. That's all she is. She's not a Christian. She denies being a Christian. She viciously attacks Christian principles. She viciously attacks Christian scriptures. So as far as I'm concerned, she's a whore. And that might be a terrible word to some people, but I would insist it's a Bible word. Whore is a Bible word. I can call the woman a whore. I call a lot of guys whores, so it's not a personal thing. It's just the truth. She's a whore for the Jew. Attacking Paul, attacking Scripture, she's a whore for the Jew. If she's not actually a Jew, there's no doubt in my mind. And I have no shame calling an 86-year-old woman of her caliber a whore. And I have a post on that in Christian Idiotentity, in that section on the Christigenia Forum, that says, that warns that Paul bashers are antichrist and Paul bashers are not Christians. And all Paul bashers are whores for the Jew. And Joy Reigns can probably join that category also, along with Troublemaker. The three of them would do good. They'd get about $10 a night between them, maybe, on a corner in New York. Okay, I'm probably starting to sound like Winstead now. I'm sorry. I just got to shoot it. I just got to shoot straight. I do. That's the way it is. I probably can't sound that bad if I wanted to. If anybody wants to talk, come on. This is an open forum. We can't have an open forum without a without somebody saying something. So, I'm sorry, Gerald.
Now, I just want to say one other quick little thing. Last night, when I was attacked there toward the before I hung up,
I wasn't there last night, so I don't know what was going on.
That wrote into the chat room. Well, it's just that they had some nasty things to say about me, and the board with my name just lit up, and it made me. And I appreciate everyone coming to my aid and saying nice things. So, if any of y'all fit into that category, thank you very much for doing that. I did not call in. A lot of people wanted me to call in and talk to him, and I felt just like Bill said earlier. I was not going to give him the credibility of calling in and arguing with him. So, but anyway, that's all I have on that. And I hope we have a good program tonight. I hope some of you folks will speak up and tell us what you think about stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there. And I know you're all going to rush to the polls tomorrow and for all the Republicans, so I'm not worried. I'll sleep well tonight.
Why would you vote for a Republican? Why would you vote for a Democrat?
I know. That's the sad whole thing is it's really not going to make much difference one way or another. You know, I remember when we all rushed to the polls. I don't remember just how long it's been, but it's been a long time ago when we had the Contract for America that the Republicans was offering us, and a dirty taste in my mouth, Democrats, kind of like we do now. And everybody rushed to the polls and voted Republican, and they swept the House, the Senate, and they put a president in. And no sooner got control of all three branches of government, they went begging to the Democrats, apologizing for winning, and asking them what the hell that they need to do to make it up to them. And, you know, if that wasn't a slap in everybody's face that that went and did their duty and voted, and, of course, we're in the same boat today, I'm sure that the Republicans tomorrow are going to sweep in the power. But once they get that power in their hands, they're going to do the same damn thing. This is a toboggan going down the hill, and it is not going to change course. It's going to continue on its track, whether it's being led Republicans or Democrats. And that's just the sad situation. And if anyone out there doubts that, any of you youngsters out there that doubt that, all you have to do is look back at history and see that the communist socialist agenda is right on track. Well, it's a Jewish agenda is what it is, right on track. And it's never missed a beat. Oh, it'll slow around a certain curves here and there, but it stays right on track. And I know that it's going to be Yahshua that is what's going to derail that train. That's the only thing that's going to derail it. You know, but I know that we, at the same time, we're supposed to do whatever we can to fulfill our responsibilities as citizens and whatnot. But the hope is not there. At least it's for me. Now, I'd like to hear somebody else tune in on that.
Well, it's the Republicans who sell us. That they won the contract with America, they won the House and the Senate, and they didn't do a damn thing with it. They sold themselves right down the river to the same Jewish money powers on Wall Street that the Democrats are in bed with, and that was only a marketing excuse when they played the conciliation card with the Democrats. Back in the 90s, it was a marketing excuse so that they didn't have to advance any of the Republican agenda, any of the so-called conservative agenda. None of them are conservatives. None of the Democrats are liberals. They're all friggin' Bolsheviks working for Wall Street, period.
Siamese twins. They talk in this direction, the other one talks in the other direction. There's points in this direction, the other one points in that direction.
They're two segments on the same worm.
Yeah. I've never seen Siamese twins walk in two different directions. They're stuck with each other.
Well, they're both bought and paid for by the same group of people, and it's Rothschild Jewish groups that have come in here and bought. We have the best Congress that money can buy, and they cannot be voted out of power. You know, someone was talking about. The chemtrails to me a couple of days ago, and I was doing some research. Matter of fact, some people sent some very good articles on that. And, you know, what it appears is the chemtrails, we know that they're going on worldwide, and we also know what they're dumping, and it is a military operation. It is our military. It's the military of other countries. And I almost guarantee you that the United States Congress could not stop the military if they knew or cared about what they're doing. They couldn't stop them. I just don't think that the military would listen to the United States Congress. I think they're over and beyond that now. We just can't spark anybody out there to speak up.
In Arizona, they've got a kind of a nice – I don't know if it's there now, but they used to – they had on the ballot there, under each section or each little segment where you're going to vote on it, it'd say none of the above. You know, yes, no, none of the above, or this guy, that guy, the other guy, or none of the above. And where I live in this small town here, not too small, but small enough, 97% of the people that are registered to vote do not vote in the city council elections. And I called up the auditor. I says, I think I made a mistake in my calculations. I think I misplaced a decimal point. I could see 9.7 not showing up, you know, but not 97%, you know. And he says, no, you're right. You don't have nobody's showing up to vote.
When I started working for county government, I was 21 years old, 20 years old, I think, 1980, October 81, I was 20 years old. And I noticed right away, I was just starting to vote, right? I noticed right away that the only people that voted in local elections were people with a direct stake in those elections. County workers, municipal workers, teachers, cops, and firemen. were the only people that voted in the elections, and the public works people. That was it.
In the lobbyists, and anybody has something to gain, huh?
Most of the people that worked for a living, they wouldn't go to the firehouse or down to the local school to vote because, it's not the president, so I don't care. That was the average line you'd hear. It's not the president, so I don't care. Well, then all the people that are really like the parasite class, right, because they're the ones that are most interested in who gets elected to county and local government because they're the ones with the biggest stake. They want raises. They want more benefits. That's why they're doing so damn good. That's why they're making so much money. Because they're the only ones that vote in those elections. The taxpayers don't even vote in the elections.
And they pay the bill.
And they're, like some of them have said, they're the most important elections. Are the local, municipal, and county elections. They're more important than the national elections. Well, whether or not, no matter who's the president, the Jew's going to win in Washington. So you better take care of things in Podunk. It's crazy. You know, people just don't care. They're totally apathetic.
When Kennedy was running for office, people were so upset down here with some of the policies and everything. We had a particular parish in Louisiana that had some real scum running for particular local offices, and the people actually went to the polls and wrote in a goat. That was the supreme slap, I think, in the face of the Democrats in that particular parish. But they had to do the election all over again because obviously a goat couldn't sit in office. But he actually won out over the Democratic candidate. And I just thought that was a hoot.
Well, you know, Jack Kennedy wasn't really a bad guy. Teddy is the liberal. Jack Kennedy would not have identified with these Democrats of today. I'm sorry. There's no way he would identify with these people today.
No, you're right. But unfortunately, down here in the South, you know, immigration was hot and heavy during the 60s. And we were going through tremendous turmoil down here. And Kennedy represented the government and a lot of the things that we were fighting against. Popular, and that's one of the reasons why George Washington.
Right, but who brought us affirmative action? Richard Nixon.
Said he would, because he was.
Carol. It was Richard Nixon that brought us affirmative action. It was Richard Nixon that created the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. It was Richard Nixon that forced school busing. In Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, as well as in the South, Richard Nixon's forced school busing.
Well, if he's following the 14th Amendment, and if everybody's subject to the 14th Amendment, and he's the executive officer of the laws under the 14th Amendment, he has to.
Well, right, but I'm saying if he'd have beat Kennedy, you may have seen school busing in 1962 instead of 1974 or 73 or whatever it was.
Well, Kennedy got elected. It was such a supposedly close margin between Nixon and Kennedy that years later they found in some old abandoned ghetto tenement house a bunch of boxes. And in these boxes were votes from various districts or voting districts in Chicago. And it was enough votes for Nixon to put Kennedy out. But David just conveniently kind of hid them off to the side, and that's how he got in. And they wrote that up in a newspaper, you know, so it's not like I'm making it up.
I don't know if the newspaper makes it reliable.
Well, it was the Chicago Tribune, if I remember right, and this Tribune hated the Democrats. I think now a Jew bought it not too long ago.
Tribune, the Chicago Tribune, the Dewey Defeats Truman paper?
if that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the, and that Rainbow Five stuff I sent you, that's the one that broke the news about Roosevelt's demand to the military to come up with a war plan and invading Germany by July of 1943.
Well, that was Bill McCormick. He wasn't going for all that Jew crap.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, he let this out of the bag on December 5th, 1941, but unfortunately 2 days later the Japs hit. And
yeah,
now
it was
we
too
know
late,
the
huh?
Japs. Yeah, yeah. It was not only too late, but also it justified Roosevelt, and he didn't have to say anything more. Now he could say, well, see, I knew it was coming type of thing, or I knew something was coming. But he knew even attack was coming. But once the war started, and it was the question was moot. Now he had to come up with a war plan whether he wanted to or not. Of course he did.
But well, the damn shame is that people don't see that there was no money for any industry or any jobs before December 7th, 1941. But on December 8th, 1941, there was plenty of money for all the industries to get together and make lots of planes and tanks to send to Germany.
There's
one declaration of war and billions of dollars suddenly pour into the economy that had been missing for 15 years, or at least 12.
Yeah. And I found a treatise called Against the Stream, Nazi Privatization in 1930s Germany by some guy in Spain. He's probably very pro-Franco. And he's saying in there that in the Depression days, all of Europe and all the democratic, supposedly, democracy nations were nationalizing all the major industries. But in Nazi Germany, it was just the opposite. They privatized them as much as they could. And I suppose that kind of made it better because in a certain amount of profit motive was involved, you know, to make money and not squander it like a government program would. But he goes into some details as to how that is. And I don't remember the site where I got it from, but it's called Against the Mainstream, Nazi Privatization in 1930s Germany.
Yeah, that might be pretty interesting.
I think I sent you a copy, or maybe I...
Yeah, I was hoping to get to the Mein Kampf this side. I did post a few things there, but I couldn't get a 1% of what I wanted to get done. I'm too busy.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about my getting those videos up. I think some of the guys would like to see those German live-action war movies that they have there. Some of the things I want to put up. Some of the books, like Germany Speaks, and a lot of the German explanations of how their government worked.
The last few nights I paid a little attention to the Saxon Messenger site, and I put some audio books up on it. I put, if anybody wants to look, I put Grimm's Fairy Tales, 62 of Grimm's Fairy Tales in audio format, Menenius's History of the Britons, in I think it's 8 parts in audio format, and Tacitus's Germania in 3 parts in audio format. And I have more of those books, and I'm going to hope to get them posted over the next few weeks. Grimm's Fairy Tales, you'll see a lot of Bible stories and the moral lessons in it, from what I understand. I haven't yet, you know, I'm only familiar with a few of them, but they're supposed to be pretty good, and they're an important part of our culture, so I put them up there.
Now, are these just text, or is it like PDFs of the ancient type, the earlier books, like from the 30s and 20s?
No, these are actually read. They're public. They're read for the public domain by a place, a nonprofit in Britain.
Oh, those are the audiobooks. Okay.
Yeah, they're strictly audiobooks. Hello, Robert. What's going on?
Well, I'm doing a little bit of work, but it sounded like you were having some trouble rounding up some talk.
Yeah, I don't know. Open forum program. Nobody wants to talk. What can I say? In the open house, they'll talk all night downstairs and. I bring them up here, and everybody just clams up. I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, as far as this election goes, I don't see it really doing anything because it's probably just going to be a rehash, like you say, just another game.
Yeah, what I think is going to happen is that the Republicans take back one of the houses of Congress, and that creates a 2-year stalemate, and nothing gets done for 2 years. But in the meantime, the Bolshevik agenda never gets reversed.
Yeah, I mean, they had so much opportunity when they controlled everything to do something, and they didn't, that it's
right.
Pretty clear to me that we're not going to get any change between Republicans and Democrats.
Right, because they're both owned by the Jews. Now, if the Republicans don't take one of the houses back, Nancy Pelosi's going to feel that she has a free ticket to do whatever the hell she wants. It's going to get a lot worse the next 2 years. And then we better hope that the 2012 thing is right, right?
That's kind of almost the direction that I think that probably would be best for whites, is if if we head in a direction where they just make it blatant. But I don't think they're going to make it blatant. I think they have this down to a science right now. A blatant manipulation of the elections would be to let the Democrats win everything.
Well, to me, the Bolshevik agenda the last 2 years has been obviously blatant, and nobody seems to care. Wait until these, they do it really craftily because they passed these laws in 2009, and the laws don't take effect until 2011 and 2012. But with the health care and taxing your health benefits and all that, when people start feeling that bite, when you get $15,000 a year in health benefits, and all of a sudden you have to pay taxes on that, and that goes on the top of your income, so that gets taxed at a high rate. I don't know. It's crazy.
I wonder why they. I haven't studied it. And
well, it's going to hurt a lot of people in the working class. You know, at the upper end of the working class, it's going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
All they're doing is taxing the people working. That's all they're doing.
Sure. Why is it that they pay a tax for insurance when it's really a compensation for losses? That's usually what it is. Compensation for your loss of health, and they're ensuring that you'll be healthy, and all of a sudden you're not, so they're saying, oh, you lost your health, so we're going to compensate you for it.
What they're doing is they're seeing what you receive in premiums as income.
Isn't the premium what we pay to
but,
the
well,
insurance
no, you're, what your employer pays in premiums on your behalf, they're going to tax.
Well, I see.
They've never taxed.
Otherwise, if we paid it. But if we paid it, there would be a deduction.
No, it's not a deduction. You don't get it deducted.
No, I mean, if we paid for health insurance, we could find some way of writing that off.
No, it's not a deduction. If you didn't have health insurance and you paid the hospital bill and the hospital bill exceeded a certain percentage of your income, you would get a deduction.
I mean, that's not the only thing. If they got that earned income credit that went on in the mid-70s, and that's just a disaster now. That's basically paying all the Mexicans.
Right. Absolutely.
But the medical thing is really, that's the medical and the increase in the Social Security is really a slap in the face to people who are a little bit successful. I mean, every time I turn around, there's another couple of $1,000 on my income. Every damn time, every year, just another couple thousand that get whacked onto that because I'm single and a professional.
Well, it's the fault of the American people because they don't understand that it's Bolshevism. They don't understand that it's Bolshevism through legislation. But even though it's through legislation, that doesn't make it it's not lawful because none of these laws are constitutional.
Yeah, see, it starts, though, Bill, with nice things.
It always does.
Us for the house owner paying for the kids to go to school. To me, that it should have been stopped way back then.
That's a form of Marxism also.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, that's been in there a very long time, the school tax.
You're right. I raised my kids. I raised six kids. I had them. It's done. It's over with. They're adults. They're gone. I shouldn't have to pay for anybody else's kids to send to school.
Well, it's even worse than that right now. What's going on now is the white people who can afford it aren't sending their kids to public school, so they're paying for the public school through their housing taxes, and they're also paying for private school.
Yes, that's
and
the truth.
So the public school, all it's doing, now what they're doing is they're forcing the whites to pay for the Mexicans. Because
right.
All
the Mexicans are in public school, and all the whites are in Catholic school. Right,
where
exactly.
Where I am right now, that's all that's going to public school. It's loaded with Mexicans. I'm not paying for whites. I'm paying for Mexicans to go to school.
Right. Right, and if you had three kids in school and you had them in private school, you'd be paying three times. You'd be paying six times. You're paying through your property tax. And because you have three kids, you have a nicer house, a bigger house, so you could each have a bedroom, so you're paying more there for your property tax. And that's all going to the school tax. Our school tax is as high as our property tax here.
Well, yeah, that's the majority of most of the taxes in most areas now is the school tax.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And there was an election on the budget last fall, and the people here voted for the higher budget. And they voted for the budget because only 1,200 people voted in a county of 59,000 people. Only like 1,200 people voted. Oh, of course all the teachers voted. And guess what they voted for? They voted for raises. Of course they're going to vote for the budget.
Well, yeah, you go talking around about socialism, and people agree with that. But I'll tell you what, you will raise a lot of problems if you go out and tell people you want to cut the school budget to nothing.
Well, you could if you cut the federal money out of it.
The federal money wasn't in it for it. That's new.
I think the Federal Education Department has been sending money down to the states ever since the days when they started forcing segregated schools, and I think that's why they got it in there, is because down there with Wallace, they were accepting federal education money for the schools, and that they claimed 14th Amendment to get those kids in there, and they took the federal money, they had to dance to the federal tune.
I don't think it's been around that long. The federal subsidies are quite new, to the last 20 years or so. School tax has been in there forever, and the consolidation of the schools.
There are so many issues that need to be addressed. No one man can know all of it, and we'd have to divide it out.
Well, there shouldn't
among
even
groups.
Be. It shouldn't even exist, the Department of Education.
Well, that's true. Even Reagan tried to get rid of a lot of others, but they always fail.
Oh, right. The Department of Education is a joke. That's more Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter did that to us.
Yeah, it's what, 76?
Well, yeah, I think it was proposed in 76 when he ran and instituted during his presidency, 1980 maybe. I forget.
Well, here it says, I don't know if this is true, it says the Department of Education was started in 1979. Probably about right.
Yeah, that's got to be about right.
But I don't think they started direct funding of locals, of state school systems for another 10, 15, 20 years after that. It seems to me that money started, because all the restrictions that local schools had, once they started accepting federal money, they didn't want to do it.
Right, it all goes out the window. Once they start accepting federal money, they become whores for the feds. They have to do what the feds say.
I know a lot of schools are reluctant to do that.
Same thing with these county law enforcement agencies. Well, once they start accepting federal money for equipment and staff, they have to start following federal guidelines as to how they're supposed to act and what laws they're supposed to enforce.
Yeah.
But the sheriffs become whores for the feds. And they care about the money. They don't care about the Constitution.
Well, these Jews today are perfect.
Bill, I'm going to...
Earl, you're cutting out. I'm sorry.
I'm going to stick it out as long as I can as a storm moving in, and I may disappear suddenly. So if I do, y'all will know what happened, and I'll miss the rest of the program. But I'm going to stick it out as long as I can.
Okay, Gerald. Be fine.
See you later. It'd be nice if he'd come up with some other way of doing it other than satellite or whatever he has, Annika.
Well, I wish I could but unfortunately, DSL won't be here in my lifetime, and the only alternative I have is dial-up. There's no alternative, so it's satellite or nothing. And unfortunately, whenever storms come up, the satellite goes out. And I can't call in to TeamSpeak. I wish I could on the phone, but that's not an option at the present time. So I will just find something else to do if it happens.
You'd have to have some way of calling someone else who is on. Somehow have it patched in. I don't know how. That way two people would be on there at the same time, but one would talk.
You know, when you're talking about...
It won't work through the headphones. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was going to get back to this the race issue when you were talking about defining what a white is, and I'm just kind of wondering if we go back to the time of the flood, how easy was it to define what a white was prior to the flood?
But well, you know, when you look at when you read the Bible, right, 12 tribes of Israel, that there's a lot that they always the way the Bible reads, right, is a man of Dan did this. A man of this tribe did that. It's evident to me that they could tell each other apart, right? It seems to me they had to have a way to tell each other apart.
Well, you can still do that today to some extent. I mean, I can still look at the features of some people and clearly see that they're from certain areas. Like, if I go to Germany, I can pick out... In fact, I picked out a couple of girls in Philadelphia area that were from... their families were from Augsburg, because I can recognize the facial structures. But I think that's probably getting rarer and rarer.
You know, my first trip to Virginia as an adult, where I spent any significant time there, right, what was in I mean, we made a few trips when I was kids. When I was a kid, I went down to Stanton and Front Royal and Luray Caverns and all that, but I never paid much attention when I was 16, right? But when I was 34, I was working for this manufacturing company, and our parent company was in Winchester, Virginia. And I had to go down and spend a lot of time there in 95. I made about a dozen trips in 95, 4 or 5 day trips. And being from the Northeast, this is true in Mass and from what I've seen, and in Jersey, if you see somebody with blonde hair, they always have blue eyes. I mean, it's almost a given that they have blue eyes if they have blonde hair. And I went to Virginia, and I saw all these blonde-haired girls with brown eyes. And I'm looking at them like, wow, I never saw yellow hair. I mean, yellow as hell, white skin, brown hair, and brown eyes. Blonde hair and brown eyes. And I never saw so many girls with blonde hair and brown eyes. And no, it wasn't dyed hair. It was natural blonde hair and brown eyes in Virginia.
That was my next question.
Did you look at the natural hair. I must have seen a dozen of them in Winchester. And a few of them worked for this company. And I'm like, I'm looking at this one girl, and she thought it was weird. And I told her why. I said, I'm sorry. I'm used to seeing blue-eyed blondes, not brown-eyed blondes.
You got me curious, Bill. I got to check out my cousin now. She's got blonde hair. She's got blonde hair, but I never really paid attention to whether her eyes were brown or blue.
You don't know what color your cousin's eyes are. That's terrible.
No, I think they actually are brown. Well, I don't see her too much.
Blue eyes disappear quick. I know, because I had three kids with a blue-eyed wife and three kids with a brown-eyed wife, and all those kids with that brown-eyed wife all had brown eyes.
Yeah, but that's not always the case.
But, well, it sure as hell seemed to be the case with me.
Well, I have another cousin with blue eyes. His wife has brown eyes. All of his three girls have blue eyes could be.
Wow.
In fact, they don't look anything like the she goes to school with the kids, and they all ask her, are these your kids? Because they don't look anything like her. They all look like my cousin. But and in fact, you know, my business partner, his eyes are brown, his wife's eyes are gray, and all their kids' eyes are blue. Check it out next time you come down.
Okay, I will.
It fascinates the hell out of me. I couldn't.
It would fascinate me too, because I kept on.
I was trying
to
figure out how all these blue-eyed kids popped out.
I kept trying to have a blue-eyed kid with his brown-eyed wife. It just didn't work. It was like trying to squeeze a diamond out of a turd, I guess. I don't know.
And you're saying that your family's always had blue eyes. It almost sounds like you have brown eyes in you somewhere there.
No, I don't have any brown eyes. Not that I know of. I mean, I knew my great-grandparents, and I knew my grandparents.
Well, see, my two brothers didn't have a chance, because my stepmother had gray eyes, and my father had blue eyes. So, no, I think my mother had brown eyes, and my father had gray eyes, so I ended up with, or blue eyes, and I ended up with green eyes. So what's all that about?
I don't know. It's about the milkman, maybe. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird the way it works. It just is.
Yeah, I don't know. I sometimes I don't know what you're going to pop. What's going to pop out? That's why I kind of wonder when you're trying to define who's who in this mixed up world today. You can have people that have a small amount of something in them somewhere from the lineage, and so they're going to end up being even though they may have characteristics that look like they belong in the kingdom, they're not going to be part of the kingdom, as you said earlier.
Well, right, but it's not our determination. But clearly to me, in looking back in history, there are white brunettes and there are white blondes, and the brunettes had tanner skin, a real brunette. And something I should have said earlier that I didn't is that blonde and brunette are not hair distinctions. They're not. A blonde person has fair skin and light-colored hair and blue or green eyes, and you can be considered a blonde. It's a skin as well as a hair distinction. A brunette person has tanner skin and usually darker hair and brown eyes, and that's a brunette. It's more than just a hair distinction. And yet, you know, the Jew media has reduced these terms to be understood as generally hair distinctions. But they're not. That they define different varieties of white people. And there are white people that tan easier and have a little more melanin in their skin than fair people. And that's why we have the term fair. Yeah, you know, the Book of Enoch, Enoch, whether it's scriptural or not, it doesn't matter. It displays ancient sensitivities to the issue, right? Noah was the whitest baby that was ever born in the Book of Enoch. But, well, okay, so if Noah was so white, I guess everybody else wasn't quite that white. But they were still white. I mean, come on. I mean, it's obvious that white comes in various shades of white. That's the way it is.
Well, I mean, you can even look at that from the perspective of redheads. Most of the redheads I've known are extraordinarily white and don't tan very well.
Yes, they are. They're extremely white and don't tan at all.
Well, some of them tan.
With much difficulty. And me all my life, and I just burn and peel. If I go out in shorts on a 90-degree day for 30 minutes, I got a sunburn on my legs. But my arms finally started to tan. I was about 38 years old.
Well, my avatar's got super flame head in it, and I think she tanned a little bit. That's the reddest hair I've ever seen on a person, was her hair.
Well, some of us tan a lot easier than others, but we're still white. That doesn't make us Arabs or Negroes or anything. That's ridiculous.
Well, you certainly seem to tan easier when you're younger, I'll tell you that. I don't tan very well now at all.
I tan more easily now. My arms do anyway.
After, I've gone the other way.
12 years of being outdoors in the summertime in prison.
I guess that's probably me too. I spent so much time outdoors when I was younger. I used to tan fairly easily. Now I don't spend much time outdoors, and I just freaking burn.
Creole blondes also have a more sensitive skin to the sun. They can't stay out there like they allege. And the blondes have more fun type advertisements. More sensitive to sunburn.
Well, it takes me about, if I go outside during the day in bare legs in the summertime, it'll take me about 20 minutes to get a sunburn on my legs. And it hurts.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting when all this comes to fruition. I mean, because I'm curious, you know, we talk about recognition of people who are white. That's one thing by visual recognition. But there's an awful lot of people you look at who you'd say were clearly white that have absolutely no interest in anything that has to do with what we're interested in. And,
right, and some of that might be genetic, but a lot of it is a lot of it's nurture. It's nature and nurture. And people have been trained in our school system. They've been trained to be atheists. The public school system in this country has already raised up about 4 or 5 generations of people who have no concept of Scripture, who have no concept of the Bible, who have no concept of creation, who believe in evolution, who have been trained to be atheists. Now, some people having pious homes have been able to overcome that because they received that instruction at home. No matter how Judeo-Christian it was, at least it was Christian, right? At least they had exposure to the idea of a God and the idea of the sanctity of the Scripture, all right? But most of us haven't had that. Most people haven't had that. So by the time they get through 12 years of an average public high school education today, and if they haven't had any instruction in religion at all from their parents, they're going to scoff at religion. They're going to scoff at the idea of a God. They think that the Jew and the television are their gods. That's how most people are raised. It's nature and nurture. We need both. Look at how the children of Israel went astray, and they had the temple and the presence of Yahweh there.
But even when they're exposed to it at this point, they're not recognizing it.
But, well, no, because they've been scoffing at it for 40 years. They need some sort of button has to be pushed, and only God can push that button. We can't push that button. We might be sometimes used as the vehicle to push that button, but we can't push it ourselves.
We can point to the button.
Yeah, right, but if that's what I'm saying. If it's not their time to wake up, they ain't going to wake up. That's the way it is.
No, there appears to be a select group of people that Yahweh selected at this point right now to be awake to do this stuff. And it's just, as we talked about the other night, it seems to be more or less a replacement number. Number of people die off, a number of people show up, and we end up building on that information a little bit. But it sure as hell is not an avalanche of Christian identity happening right now.
But, well, you know something? It's a hell of a lot more than I thought, than I expected to see before I got out of prison. I'm being honest.
I think it's because the information is better now, Bill.
If you'd have told me 2 years ago, I've been out for almost 23 months, and in 1 week it'll be 23 months. If you'd have told me 23 months ago that in 2 years you'll be sitting in your own chat room talking to 30, 40 CI people a couple of nights a week, I'd have told you, get lost, get out of here. You're kidding me, right? No way. Maybe it'll be three. And I would still have my website. But that's what I expected.
I still think it comes with a refining. I mean, we go back to that Delaney interview when I was talking to you, and I was searching for something that made sense at that point. And everything else I was getting was just a bunch of hogwash. You could intellectually figure out that it was just a mess. And the CI wasn't really offering a whole. I mean, I didn't know too many people in CI, but there wasn't anybody real visible. You're at the pinnacle, Bill.
We also came along at a time when communication has been at its best.
Yes, it's not only the communication, but it's the information.
Well, a lot of BS out there, too, as we see, just listening tonight.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the vote of confidence, but I didn't expect to be at any pinnacle.
I'll send you a bill, Bill.
When I got out of prison, I was highly disappointed at the quality of CI material I saw on the Internet and the volume of it. But there was Israel Elect and a couple of other websites that were half bullshit, and that was it. And I was extremely disappointed.
Well, there's so much of it that still wants to include the Jew.
Right. And I'm still very disappointed with it. It's I don't know. It's basically terrible.
But could that problem with addressing the Jewish question and constant barrage, it seems everywhere you go on those ones, there's always something about the Jew, the Jew, the Jew. But wasn't that sort of like a growing pain or something like that, or a stage that he had to go through?
I think everybody wants to include the Jew. They want to have them as one of the tribes instead of just basically saying that these guys are the seed of Satan. I mean, the second I understood the two seed line thing, it was over. That was an avalanche at that point. I don't know if that was for the rest of people, but the two seed line thing was crucial. Once you get that, it's a much easier, much more smooth sailing.
I kind of. And every now and then I harp on this, but I don't really call it Christian identity or C. I call it Israelite identity, because that's what it is. We're identifying ourselves as Israel. And Israel preceded Christianity, even though it is alleged that the religion of the Israelites of the Old Testament was Christianity, but we don't know what they really called their religion, but it might be the worship of Yahweh, so it could be Yahwist, something like that. But we're Israel identity. More than Christian identity. That's my view.
Well, right. I like to use the term Christian Israel identity. But, yeah, you know, when somebody here calls it one thing or the other, we usually know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in my writing, I usually like to say Christian Israel identity. Take that extra step.
Yeah.
And my religion does include the Jew. I don't know why you say I exclude the Jew. They're the tares that are going to be gathered and bundled and burned in the fire. I'm not excluding them.
No, Bill. I mean,
I'm just joking with you, Bob.
Yeah, but the Jews not included as one of the tribes.
Oh, well, they're not. That's just a historical fact.
Yeah, but look at British Israelism.
But, well, those people are just nuts. I mean, they've been bought and paid for by the Jew. They have to lie.
Ted likes the same way. He thinks the Jews can be redeemed.
Right.
Anybody that's worked with them or been around them long enough knows that that's not possible.
Right. Well, evidently, Ted Pike just hasn't been around them long enough. Either that or he has one standing over his shoulder making sure he says the right thing.
Yeah, with a hand in his hip pocket.
Well, today, Chris DeGeni is rated the 157,269th site in the world. Not bad.
And how does mine come together?
It's all together. I can't segregate them. Mein Kampf gets about 120 to 150 visits a day. Chris DeGeni gets about 350 visits a day. The New Ensign site, which is now the Saxon Messenger site, gets about 90 to 100 visits a day. And the total figure is not that high, as high as those three totals because a lot of people go to multiple of those same sites, so they only get counted once, right?
I was looking the other day on the Mein Kampf site. There is over 4,000 images in the image gallery, if I calculated that right.
Oh, yeah, there's probably got to be 4,000 images by now, I'm sure.
Bill, is there no white blood outside of the tribes?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of the Slavic people, especially the Western Slavs, are still white. There's no guarantee that they all are, of course, but I'm sure that a lot of them still are white. I mean, Shepeth will dwell in the tents of Shem, and that scripture has to be fulfilled.
Yeah, because I would assume that not everyone who's white is definitely in the tribes.
Absolutely not.
I didn't get that out of scripture.
You won't get it out of scripture. You won't. The scripture clearly indicates that there are non-Israelite whites living amongst us.
Now, white, you mean racially Caucasian, as we know it today?
No, what are Japhethite tribes or people from other Shemite tribes? It's very possible that's the case.
Now, would the Shemites and the Japhethites, would they be considered Caucasians today?
Yeah, if they're still white.
It's hard to tell.
I mean, it's hard to tell. We don't know. First, the Scythians took a lot of Persian and Assyrian and Median slaves with them when they went into Europe. Theodorus and Strabo describe how the Scythians forced some colonies of the Medes and the Assyrians to move north of the Caucasus, north of the Caucasus Mountains, and settled them along the Tanais River, which is the modern Don. It's the river that comes straight down through the Ukraine into the Black Sea. Now, that's where we find, for the most part, a people called the Sarmatians, who can be connected to the West Slavs to a great degree.
Does it say why?
The Sarmatians sort of followed the Scythians into Europe, around the Black Sea and up the Danube.
Does it say why they allowed them, or why they forced them up there?
No, but that's what the Greek histories write. I quoted in my German Origins papers. I quoted in
readings somewhere where it said to the effect that Nebuchadnezzar and those types put the Israelites to their northern border to keep the other people from beyond that northern border to coming down south into Nebuchadnezzar's area.
Well, that's what E. Raymond Capps wrote. I don't know if there's a lot of documentation for that.
I've got a lot of his stuff. I've got his books, and I've got his four CD set, and I don't know how many books over there, a bunch of them, 8 or 9 of them at least. And there's no, I mean, it's great reading, you know, but the problem is he doesn't document it. He doesn't cite anything.
And that's why I wrote my German Origins papers. And I still have some research to do in that area, but that's why I wrote my papers, because I cite everything.
Yeah, it makes it longer, that's for sure.
He doesn't cite a lot of stuff. In fact, there were quotes from E. Raymond Capps. He said something about Diodorus Siculus that I was really disappointed, because Diodorus Siculus is 12 volumes, right? And I start reading at volume 1. And the whole time I'm reading, I got this quote that E. Raymond Capps attributes to Diodorus Siculus in my head, right? So I get through volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, volume 4, volume 5, volume 6. I'm starting to think this guy's full of shit, volume 6, right? Volume 7. Now I didn't get... I was in prison, and my family sent me in these 12 volumes of Diodorus Siculus. But since you can only have 5 books, that's the rule, you can't receive more than 5 books at a time. So they would send me 2 here, and a couple of months later send me 2 there, and a month later send me 2 more. So I'm reading, I'm up to volume 9, volume 10. I'm like, this guy's just full of it. He's pulling my damn leg. Because I'm reading these classics because I wanted to prove the identity story to myself, right? Well, finally I get to volume 12, and there it is. But it's in volume 12. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, if I knew it was going to be in volume 12, I'd have probably asked for that first.
And never got the others.
No, I would. I wanted to read it, but yeah, I may not have read it as quick.
Swift, in his sermons,
obviously you can't cite anything in a sermon really that much, and therefore when they were put in transcription by Mast, there's nothing there. But the guy Dignam Identity, Palamore, I think he got all of the Swift books when Lorraine moved up to Lancaster. Greer had the library, and unfortunately, I wanted to get all the books on Jewish things, but the guy Palamore got there before I did, and he took them all. So he's got anything that Swift would have relied on, or a lot of what Swift would have relied on for the background of why he would preach the way he did, citing certain things.
Yeah, now to me there's another disappointment. Here's a guy with the entire Wesley Swift library, and he's had a website for 15 years. The only thing he has on his website are basically a couple of podcasts and stuff that he sells, and he hasn't produced one book. Only one. He's only produced one book in 15 years, The Apple Story. That's it. And everything else he has is just stuff that he sells that belongs to other people. I mean, I sell my New Testament, but the whole damn thing is there for free. If you can't afford it, you just download the PDFs.
Mm.
You know, it'd be nice to sell books, but it's not what my website's about. Everything that I've written is out there for nothing.
I remember you pointed out that you had it in print, and I decided to send you $10 in cash and just download it from the internet so you get a bigger chunk of your cut of the action. It'd be neat.
Pilgrim's right. There's no info available at Halimore's site, and it is very disappointing. Because he should have spent the last 15 years taking that stuff and putting it online.
Yeah.
I've been out for 2 years, and thanks to you and thanks to Pilgrim, we have an entire Wesley Swift site right online that's searchable. You could search for any word down to three letters on that site. And Mike Halimore has been sitting on his ass for 15 years. That's why I was disappointed when I got out and looked at what was available.
I've got a lot of his 6-inch reels, I think, to the original recordings. And he said, well, send them on down, you know. I said, well, I'll send you one or two, because I knew if I sent them, I'd never get them back. And I said, I'll send a couple down there, and you can copy them and send them back to me. He has some kind of a computer down there that he was going to run through, and somehow it's going to take out all the popping and the whistling and all the strange background sounds, you know. And I said, don't bother with that. Just put them online and fix it up later. Just get them up there and online, you know. So he never did send the other two back. And I haven't sent them any since. I kept sending emails and written letters, and I never get them back. Well, I'm not going to get any. But I've got a lot of the audio, 700 of them. So if I can
When I wrote The Race of Genesis 10, Clifton sent it to Mike Halimore to see if he'd be interested in publishing it, and Halimore said it was nothing special. So that he just dismissed it like that, so I'm not going to... I have nothing for him. I'm sorry. The Race of Genesis 10, it's not the best paper on the topic. I could probably write a better one now that I'm out, and hopefully someday I will, or at least expand on that one. Mm-hmm. But what I try to do is show in a short paper that all of the people of Genesis 10 are white and are identifiable. That's all I tried to do. And I think that I achieved that. But he wanted nothing to do with my historical essays, so now I could understand why. He probably felt that he couldn't sell them for enough money to make a profit.
Or else he's just jealous of your intellect. It happens. Or maybe he was one of these Christians that's, he likes to forgive people, but not guys in prison.
Well, it's had 2,700 reads almost on my site, so 2,700 people got it for nothing, and that's just fine.
Now, how many sent you a little donation to kind of contribute to the cause?
Well, don't worry about that.
Yeah. Do you know how, if I had a reel-to-reel player, and I plugged it into the computer, is there a program or some way that I can change that? I think there is, so I can change the audio into a digital. I haven't tried it yet. Someone said something about it, and I think it may have sent you something on it. I haven't tried it. If I could do that, I just turn on this Swift tape that I have here and just put it into the computer. But I think there's a lot of those tapes already there from was it Israel Elect? I think he may have gotten it from Lorraine Swift. There's the audio sermons.
I still have to dig out the print sermons Lorraine Swift sent me and compare them to what we have online and see if there is anything that still has to go up online. And I still have to match up all of those audio sermons to the appropriate print sermons that are online.
Getting caught up in my wire here. I'm going to look at all the Swift ones. Those are just text, aren't they? There are no audio.
There's 300 audios there online on the Swift site. I just have to match them up to the appropriate sermons. I'm going to match them up and embed them in the appropriate sermons. If you look on the top of the Swift site, there's an audio library.
Now,
you could download them, but you can't play them on the site. And that's because to play them on the site, every single one of them has to be resampled. And that's going to take a lot of time because they're not at the appropriate, at a sample rate appropriate for the software that I use that embeds the player on the site. Either that or I have to find a new player. But they can be downloaded.
And there are how many here?
There are about 300 there.
Okay.
Okay. Net audio library. Some of them have 30, 40 downloads. Some of them have 10 downloads, 8 downloads, 10 downloads, 13 downloads. So people have been downloading them. I mean, they're not exactly flying off the shelf, right? And there's some Bill Gale ones at the end. There's 34 pages of at least 10 audios on a page. That's a lot of audios.
Yeah, I'd have to compare the... Seems to me... I may have sent to Pilgrim, or maybe to you, comparison of what's online here and what's not. That was a while ago.
That'll work out. What is that?
I had compared the, I think it was at least the print sermons with what I have here, and some of the titles and some of the misspelled words that were in there, I suppose are corrected by now. And I don't know if I've sent it to you or if I sent it to Pilgrim. I don't know if I have her email address. I think I sent it to you to forward to Pilgrim, but it was it took all the sermons that are online here and I compared it with the list that I have here, and for names and the titles, it's like that, vague in my mind right now. But I remember doing it and then sending it to someone.
Well, you know, I got about 1,200 emails that are read but that are not answered, and I just can't. If I answered all my email, I wouldn't be able to do anything else. But I can't remember what you've sent. I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff in there that I have to process, and some of it's probably getting close to a year old, but I can't remember what you sent me. I'm sorry. I just can't.
Well, when the time is right, it'll pop up. If it hasn't been, if I didn't send it to Pilgrim, then I'd probably send it to you, and it'll come along when it's ready.
Where did White Ceramic Bowl go? He wanted to talk before, and I turned his microphone on, and he ran out. He never talked. I guess he left. Come on, people. This is an open forum. If somebody wants to talk, right-click your name and request talk power, and I'll turn your microphone on. I can't have an open forum without open forum participants. That's what open forum is about.
You know, Bill, in this getting back to a little bit to the origin stuff, I was wondering if you had any material on your site concerning, Satan was supposedly created perfect and pure to begin with, and then he fell. There was some inequity found in him.
Well, let's start with that, right? Because that is a more or less, I don't want to say mainstream, that's a common identity interpretation of an oracle against the King of Tyre.
Okay, yes.
But it's never spoken of the original fallen angels, right? I mean, it's a pattern that they would fit, and I could see that. However, it's really from Ezekiel chapters 27, 28 in there, and it's an oracle against the King of Tyre.
Yeah, I always kind of thought that we had deviated from the actually talking about the King of Tyre to actually talking about other celestial events.
Well, that's what a lot of people read into it. They're reading into it, right? That was one of the disputes. That wasn't really a big dispute, but it was a variation in interpretation between Eli and I when we covered that chapter of Ezekiel a few months ago. And my point is that it would fit the same pattern, but any Adamic man who is given a dominion by Yahweh to rule a nation or a tribe who falls into error and actually misrules or mismanages his dominion and uses it for evil purposes is fitting that pattern, right? It can be said to be fitting that same pattern. It's rebellion from Yahweh.
Well, that's true, but I'm just still kind of wondering if we go from that point, that means that I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding how something can be pure, and then that God made it pure, and then it's flawed.
But well, you know, we have freedom of choice. That's the you have to take the good with the bad, right? It's obvious reading the creation story in Genesis, even, that it was the will of God to create beings in His image who had freedom of choice. And because we have freedom of choice, we have freedom to screw up. And even though He is God, and He knows, because He is God, that we are either going to take a good road or a bad road with our lives, that doesn't mean that it's His fault when we screw up. And because we have freedom of choice, we're bound to make mistakes, but some of us just make mistakes a lot more seriously than others. And I mean, without freedom of choice, without His children, His creation, having freedom of choice, well, like Under the Mist said, we would be robots. I mean, what would be a point? There'd be no point to life.
Yeah, but it seems like genetically, if we go back to Cain being formed, right, we're talking about something that now seems to be a genetic sort of error.
Well, right, it is a genetic error because Cain is a bastard and really can never do good in the long run. And that's part of the lesson here. Cain was formed in rebellion. Cain was formed in departure from the law. And because of that, he can never do well, even though even he has freedom of choice. But we being God's children, that's the lesson we have to learn. Whenever we transgress His law, look at what it leads to. Look at where we are today. Look at the last 7,500 years of history. And that's part of the lesson for all of us.
I guess it's just one of those things that's when you're trying to explain two seed line, it gets in there, it kind of gets in the way, because I look at it from the perspective of God didn't create Satan. Did he automatically create him, assuming that he was gonna fall? I mean, he must have known that was going to be the result.
But well, I would say that he must have known, and I would say that that was part of that freedom of choice that He gave us. And I would say that that He, being God, couldn't help but see that fall. And I would say that because there was that initial rebellion from God, from His way, that all of us have to experience rebellion from God. And that's the lesson, and that's the point. Now, Cain was, I believe that the Genesis 3 event represents a race-mixing event, and that Cain and everybody like him, everybody who, as Jude says, has followed in the way of Cain, they are even offered to do good. The Pharisees didn't have to kill Christ. The Sadducees didn't have to kill Christ. But he knew ahead of time that it was absolutely inevitable that they would. Because, being evil, they cannot do good. They might do little things that seem good here and there, but overall, they can't do good.
Well, it's clear to me that if I look at what even before I became this two seed line, it was clear to me that there was something inherently wrong with the Jew. It was just evident. Coming to that realization that there are quote people out there that's all they do is evil and deception is kind of shocking.
Well, right, but you had to have some life experience to bring you to looking for the reason why, right? And most of the people in our country haven't had that life experience yet. Most white people haven't had that life experience yet, and they don't so they don't have any impetus to look for the reason why.
Yeah, and a little town I'm at.
I really believe that. I'm sorry, Ron. Go ahead.
The little town I'm in, for a long time it was like over 90% white. Now it's about 87% white, but this still the whitest state about in the whole country. They don't have any experience with these Negroes, for example. And they're coming in with this HUD and these voucher things where these black welfare people have been out for all their life and their parents and grandparents, I mean their mother and their grandmother, because the old man's gone. They've been on it all their lives for generations, and they're coming in here with their attitudes of the Chicago South, you know, ghetto, and they don't know how to handle it because they don't have any experience at it. And when I get up and I start railing at them sometimes, I do this one time at a meeting, I stood there for about 10 minutes, beat their loving crap out of the Negro idea, then their minds that they're just like us. And they don't understand it because they haven't until recently come across a close enough relationship to see that these people are just plain stupid. And the relationship with the Jews. I lived in a big city where there was a lot of Jews, and I had a lot of trouble with them. And until you have experience with them, it just doesn't make sense how they could be not God's chosen people. So, you know, like you say, they haven't had that experience yet. They will.
Oh, I've been saying that for a long time, and it's exactly right. They haven't experienced the Negro. They haven't experienced the Mexican. So they automatically feel as if the Negro and the Mexican are what they see them portrayed as on the television. And in reality, they are nothing like that.
But I don't know how someone can deny that they get a critical mass of blacks in an area and it's just destruction. That's undeniable.
Well, right, but the people here in upstate New York don't know that because a lot of them have never been down to Newark. They've never been to Bedford Stuyvesant.
They don't need to be to Newark, Bill.
They've never been. They don't know what those places are like. They really haven't experienced it. And you really have to experience. You really need a catalyst. I really believe that awakening requires a catalyst.
But in your situation in New York, those people who don't know is because there are no Negroes in their towns. Is that right?
Right. Or there might be, but there's very few, right? I mean, there might be a few dozen here in this town I live in. But that's it, a few dozen. And they're on their best behavior. Because they know if they start acting like niggers, they'll stand out like a sore thumb.
That's what I'm saying. They get a critical mass, and then it's all over. It's too late.
Exactly.
And then they call the protections of the U.S. attorney and civil rights.
Well, they bring the Jew in.
Yeah. Well, same thing. Now, and again, when we mention this to those people that have not had this experience, it almost has to be tempered with that in mind, that we kind of have to explain things almost like you're talking to grade school children, because you can't talk with big ideas to big people. You have to take little ideas to big people. Talk to them like they're little grade school children, you know, little by little.
I just don't know how you can live in the world now and not understand that. I don't even know how you cannot live in this world and understand that this migration of Mexicans up from Mexico is bringing Mexico to the United States. Every single area they go into, they destroy.
Yeah. Well, there's been estimated, before I moved out here from that area, right there on the border, and even now they say, even along all the border, is that every day and every week, the size of the town I'm in, which is about 50,000 people, every week that number of people come over the border into America. Just in a San Diego, in Southern California border, and that doesn't even include Arizona or New Mexico or Texas. So I think they know it, but they haven't been, like you say, they haven't felt it yet. But they see more and more people in the stores that are brown-skinned and they're talking Spanish. And I was over in Grand Rapids doing some work. I thought, good grief, you know, there's almost as many Hispanic Mexicans here as there are white people. And I think, what's going on here? This is Michigan. This is supposed to be white, you know. But people are getting wise to it, but you just haven't had that snap yet. They haven't quite admitted. They're like in denial. It must be just a few here. Well, there may be everywhere else or somewhere else, you know. They're just congregated here. No, the whole state was full of them. And even in the Midwest, everywhere you go, the largest number of Mexicans in the country is in Iowa. And what other state was there? Some like an agricultural state. And that was a surprise to me. Because you hardly, you see them, but it's more and more now. But at the time I learned about that, they were still staying out of the big cities and staying out of the smaller towns. They're just working on the farms and stuff like that. But they have to be awakened to show that they're in denial, and then show them what's really going on, and then let them decide for themselves.
I think it's beyond that. They're not going to decide for themselves. They're going to continue to be in denial, and then there's just going to be miscegenation and just a massive mess. That's what the result of this is going to be.
Well, the problem is, and every now and then I mention this too, is that statistically speaking, which doesn't necessarily reflect reality, but it does pretty good, is that usually for a race of people to exist, you have to have 2.1 births per 1,000 women. Well, in America in particular, the birth rate here has been 0.4, which means 5 or 6 people die in a white race for every one that's born. The blacks, for every one black that dies, there's 5 or 6 born. And the Hispanics, there's 8 or 9 born for every one Hispanic that dies. And the Muslims, they're popping them out like that same thing, 8 and 9. So we're losing the battle. And if I compare it to a bucket of water, if you had a bucket of water with a hole in it, and you have in 5 cups of water drip out, and only 1 cup of water is poured in at the top, how long will it take before the bucket of water is empty? That's the way it is with the white race. I don't think the white race will exist by the end of this century.
Oh, it'll exist. There's no doubt.
Maybe hidden in pockets where nobody knows
it. That's the promise of Scripture, Ron. I mean,
well, that may be so, but as far as a recognizable, a sizable number of people that you call a race, it will not be here. There may be pockets, they say, well, don't worry about them, forget them, or there may be pockets of people that are white that no one knows about. But as far as a race of people, you can look anywhere and see them like it used to be, that we're gone. When we cannot have 1 birth per woman per year in childbearing age and pull us out of the bucket. You'd have to have quadruplets and quintuplets.
Well, that's why Galatians 4:27-28 says, for it is written, be glad and barren who is not barren. Break forth and shout, she who is not travailing. In other words, the race that is not having babies. Because many more are the children of the desolate, children of the barren, the children of the Edomites, the children of the Ishmaelites, this is talking in the context of Abraham's descendants, right? Then of she who has the husband, meaning Israel. In other words, we're going to be severely outnumbered, even in our own lands. That's the way it is. There's no getting around the Scripture.
And it's working out.
Read Galatians 4:27-28.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely working out because most of the white women are out with non-white men right now.
Yeah, right. So even the few white women that are having children, only half of them might be white or even less. So it's even worse.
Yeah.
Like Pilgrim says, this is all good news for us because we know that the Scripture is going to be fulfilled.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, I can't see this lasting. If you really look at what's going on right now, I can't see that there's going to be, beyond the kids that are born today, there's going to be any significant number of whites after this. It looks to me like it's pretty much over.
Yeah, it's all swiftly downhill here, as far as population is concerned. Swiftly downhill.
Oh, yeah.
Which doesn't help any, because it's a painful knowledge, knowing that, well, we'll be saved in the end, but here we are right now, you know, looking at all this happening.
Well, it's pretty clear to me, because, I mean, all I have to do is look at the demographics of the area I live in, and it's astounding. I mean, I don't know what they're saying about California being, 50% white, or they just lost their majority standing. As far as I'm concerned, they lost their majority standing 50 years ago.
Despite there's a great number of those white people that they call white really aren't white.
Exactly.
They're Jews or they're Muslims.
They're Jews, they're Sicilians, they're Arabs who were classified on census records as white. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But they are.
Yeah.
White Hispanics, quote unquote, because they're not black Hispanics.
Yeah, or brown.
They're really fudging the records up with that Hispanic designation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's certainly tainting the waters there.
They even had the FBI. I think their records now say if a Hispanic commits a crime, against anybody, they mark down as a white person. But if a Hispanic is a victim, they count it as a Hispanic, which kind of throws things off. It makes the whites look like they're committing more crimes when they're not.
Right.
I had I still have a book here. It's several years old now. It's a zip code book for businesses that want to do direct mail and stuff like that. And it shows you each city in the whole country and basically what the racial composition is. They have white, black, Hispanic, Asian, and some other one like that. There are four or five divisions like that. And every city out there where it said whites, it had a comparison, I think, over the years. And there was always a loss of whites, you know, the fewer whites in there. So I thought, well, maybe the small towns are moving to the big city, you know. But I looked at the big cities, and it's the same thing. There's always minus signs or lower numbers, anyway, of whites and whites. They're just dying out. Dying out. I think Gerald said something about how down where he lives, there are some fairly nice big houses that are abandoned because the people died and there's no children or the children are far away or whatever and they're just standing there unoccupied. And that's what's happening. We're just drying up.
Oh, that's right. A lot of people don't want to have babies.
Yeah, and now it's almost impossible with the costs.
I think that's a cop-out.
Yeah, it is a cop-out. I had six kids and I could never afford any of them. But they all made it. Somehow they made it.
I keep
and I spent 12 years in prison. I mean, they probably could have made it better if I was home, but that they all made it.
That's the thing here about whites now. We can't afford it.
I couldn't afford my first kid, and I had my second 18 months later. And I had my third 2 years later.
You know what? I see all these blacks and Mexicans are going, we can't afford to have kids.
Oh, yeah. Let me see some Mexican babes. She's right. Got one on her, two on each hand, you know. One on each hand. They got another one in the hopper ready to be delivered.
They didn't worry about that. My parents didn't worry about that in the 60s.
Hell no, they didn't.
My aunts and uncles never worried about that nonsense.
It's the me first stuff, you know, me. My career, my job, my fancy car.
Until that, exactly. It's exactly what it is.
But Charles says what they mean is I'm not willing to sacrifice, and that's exactly it. It's an egocentric and narcissistic world that we live in. And that's the training that we've gotten in the public school system and through that screaming Jew in the living room.
Yeah, that's it, because they get hypnotized. They see all these busty broads out there and these guys and hunks, you know, and they're trying to imitate that, and they never have children on there. Except the children make fools of their parents on television. That's the only children you get there.
Well, even the ones that aren't doing that, I know several younger couples, and they're not having any kids because it's just not convenient. Well, we want to enjoy each other for a while.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to get used to each other for a year or two, but, you know, once you burn off the passions and stuff like that, but then you got to get to work.
Yeah, well, I had some other things to say about it with a couple of these couples, which is not appropriate for a recorded program.
Quick, Bill, turn it off. Yeah, there's some things you can say, and it does make it indifferent what you say.
No, but I mean, it does hit a you know, to think that they're doing the quote moral right thing, and it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, because there's so many people in the world, we don't want to contribute to an overpopulated world. Well, they don't understand the statistics that we're going to be dead in 50 years, you know, and all the other.
You know what the problem is? Is that they're including people that aren't people. The world's not overpopulated. The world's overpopulated with animals and beasts.
Beast creatures. Savage Negro beasts. They will inherit the earth when we're gone. And they keep bellying about the pollution, and we got to stop ozone, we got to stop CO2, whatever it is, and we got to stop pollution, blah, blah, blah. My answer to that, and the gentle cynic side, I put it up there, is Darwinism will solve the problem. Strongest and the survival of the fittest is what it's going to be. And the white race is not fit because we're not fit enough to be able to bear children and keep our place. So we're losers. And the Negroes and the Hispanics and all these people that did not even thought about creating this technology that we have today, we are going to die out. And when we die out, there goes the brilliant mind that created these advantages.
You know, that's one of the ultimate hypocrisies of the liberal agenda. Is that they embrace Darwin and push evolution theory, but they reject Darwin and his theory concerning the survival of the fittest by forcing us to embrace and lift up these third world races. That's a monumental act of hypocrisy.
Yeah, because
if we believed Darwin, we would not have a welfare system. We would take the unfit people and let them starve to death. If we believed Darwin, we would not let these third world people into our first world nation. Because if they were fit, they would build a viable nation where they are. Jew wants you to embrace Darwin when it comes to creation, but reject Darwin in his political agenda where it comes to survival of the fittest. It's a monumental hypocrisy.
And these people are coming in here. They don't have history has shown for thousands of years that they don't have the intellect to invent what we have, so they're not going to have the intellect to be able to keep it running and to repair it and to make any improvements on it. So when they finally get done with the cars break down, they can't fix it, they can't come up with the machine, they made the part that fixed the part that makes the part that ends up repairing the cars, they just don't have it. And they don't understand computer programming and all that stuff. And those few that do won't be enough to be able to save them.
Well, of course not, but the Jew doesn't care about that. The Jew only cares about the destruction of the white race and the creation of the recreation of society in his own bastard image.
They're going to have to do it in the dark because nothing's going to run. All the stuff, everything that we got is going to collapse. All the pollution problems are going to go away because everything that creates pollution is from our technology. If we're smart enough to come up with the problem and we inadvertently create a pollution problem, then we're smart enough to solve the pollution problem. But if we don't pull ourselves out of the bucket and get back into the superior place, then, well, everything falls apart and pollution stops. And if we do pull ourselves up and get back to our proper place, we can solve the problem and the pollution stops. So one way or the other, if we're strong enough and fit, we will survive and we will solve the pollution problem. If we're not, we will die. Our products that we've created will die with us, and the pollution problem will be solved one way or the other. It's going to be solved by the end of the century.
Well, the pollution problem is all the other races.
Yeah, right. and a lot of the pollution problem is overstated. I mean, there are times when major corporations, mostly Jew-controlled corporations, have created localized pollution problems like chromium and various chemical spills. Mm-hmm. And that's bad. I'm not saying that's good. That's bad. It is. And companies should have a stewardship of their community and the property around them. There's no doubt. But Jewish capitalism doesn't want any stewardship or any responsibility. Jewish capitalism just wants to make as much money as possible, as quickly as possible, right? And that's the difference between free enterprise and a community and Jewish capitalism. That Jewish capitalism is simply evil. Now, as far as carbon dioxide is concerned, and these so-called global warming elements we're putting into our atmosphere, well, carbon dioxide is plant food. I don't care about how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere. It's crazy. That's plant food. And the more we have, the better, because the more food the trees will have. I don't, the whole global warming thing is a total farce.
I think their theory is, and I'm just kind of guessing at this, is that there is a certain amount of balance between oxygen and CO2, and supposedly if you have too much CO2, then it's almost like having too much
oxygen. But they don't know that. They don't know that. That's not proven. That's only some lame brain scientist's theory. It's not proven at all.
Yeah.
So why should we react to a theory? You can't react to a theory. You could react to an actual event, but global warming is only a theory, and it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened at all.
There's no global warming. It's just nonsense.
And in 1970, they were telling us we were going to be in an ice age and we were going to be out of oil by 2000. I remember sitting in a classroom and hearing that bullshit. We were all going to be in a deep freeze. By the time I was 40 years old, we were doomed. Jump off the roof now.
No, carbon dioxide is not a global warming. It's not a global warming gas, period, and it doesn't consist of there's not a significant amount of it in the atmosphere anyhow. 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 1% argon, and 0.04% carbon dioxide. So what the hell if it doubles?
Yeah. Well, the only reason they get that out, they have control of the mouthpiece and the speaker and the loudspeaker and the news. So that's what they get first dibs.
They want to control energy. That's what they want to do, because everything you burn produces carbon dioxide. So if they can control carbon dioxide emissions, creating this fake global warming,
then they could bolshevize the world economy, which is what they really want to do.
Then what they do is no one can, you know, light a fire in their fireplace. No one can grill food. No one can do anything with heat. It's all controlled by the Jew.
So you're going to have to go eat at McDonald's.
I mean, really, I mean, if you look at it, the best thing that can happen is this thing can fall apart faster. From our perspective, because I don't want to be 99 years old if I make it that long, and then it's falling apart.
Hey, you don't want the shit to hit the fan when you're in a wheelchair, right? That's no
exactly.
fun.
You can watch the revolution from the from your porch.
That's kind of maybe a self-centered way of looking at it, but...
My son keeps pushing me like that. He says, Dad, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? I don't want to be old like you when it happens. I want to hit him.
Yeah, there you go. You know what, Bill? I'll tell you, it still could be 20 years, because you say you see a few people waking up. I see nothing going on.
Well, I'm telling you, this is a lot better than I envisioned it 2 years ago. That's all I'm saying. I never imagined 2 years ago.
What? 30 people out of 3 billion? Or how many whites are left?
Oh, well, it's 10 times more than I figured on.
it's just the increase in the visits to the site is encouraging.
Yes, it is encouraging.
If you knew that
each state?
Well, each state, not quite. Obama says we got 57 states.
There you go.
If you knew who it was, or the race of the people that are visiting, as opposed to a bunch of Jews from Israel looking at it, that would be a little bit different. But you just have to go by the numbers, of just raw numbers, starts, you know. And
yeah,
here it goes.
I mean, I'm encouraged in the sense that, to me, it looks like it could happen anytime quick. I just don't see a whole lot of people out there coming up with any clues.
Well, more and more people are looking. I have no doubt about that.
They aren't finding. I don't know how many people I've talked to personally, and they just don't get it. Not at all.
Well, just planting seeds is all you can do. Come up with a nifty little phrase, and then just dump it down a little bit and walk away.
Yeah, definitely. You got to walk away, just like the apostles did.
Yeah. Or change the subject if you're at work or something like that, you know. So that one place you don't want to talk about it, I think this is a good idea, like for Thanksgiving come up here, is just don't talk about politics. Don't talk about race. Don't talk about religion. A friend of mine years ago, he's dead now. In fact, his wife is dead, too, a little after that. They said, she called me up and says, well, come on down for Thanksgiving. I says, well, now they had a brother-in-law that was always provoking this friend of mine about religion and politics, you know. And he was a very temperamental guy, so he'd get real angry over the... And the brother-in-law enjoyed having this guy provoked. So I said to this one, I says, Artis, I says, if I go down there, I'll do it on one condition. I says, you have to tell them that you told me that there will be no discussion of politics or religion. That way I'll go down. She says, it's a deal, she says. So I got down there, and this smart-ass brother-in-law starts provoking it. Says, well, what about such and such? Don't you think this, that, and the other? And I looked at him. I says, you know, I would very much like to answer your question. It's just a political question. But I told Artis, I promised her when she told me to come down. She said I was not supposed to talk about politics or religion, and I'm not going to do it. So I can't answer your question. And from there on, the rest of the day went pretty smooth. So sometimes you have to just not talk about these things to people that are close, because they don't want to hear you change so dramatically from what they are. Sometimes with the family gatherings and the holidays, just don't even talk about it. You know, just get them later.
Well, we got to have something else here. Anybody wants to talk, just let me know and I'll turn your microphone on. Right-click on your name and click Request Talk Power.
There's an awful lot of them. Look at them all.
There's a lot down there. Yeah, you know, I got to get a little bit of work done here. It's my big day tomorrow. So
tomorrow you're on you're on the grind tomorrow.
I'm on the grind tomorrow, but I came up here to try to get things rolling. These topics, I like the race topic. That's always fascinates me, and then also the fall topic. But it's something that the other thing that gets me though is it's just very depressing to look at once you wake up to what your brethren are or what's supposed to be happening. It's really quite depressing to be looking at all these whites around you and realize that they just aren't interested, and why it happens to be us that are awake, and we get to look at this as almost sort of a punishment.
Well, right, but you know, we also have to look at this as a preparation, because the things that we see and experience in this life are our preparation for the next. And I really believe that if you're given a lot of insight and if you're given the, you know, the hard courses in this life, then you're being prepared for a better position in the next. I mean, that's just the way I see it. I could be wrong, but otherwise it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, the other thing I wanted, just before I got off here, I was looking at those Sumerian kings again, too, that, you know, how they lived so long.
Yes, the Sumerian king list.
Is there any possibility that that's actually referring to a lineage of kings rather than a single individual?
Well, that has been postulated, but, you know, there's not really any evidence for that in any other writings, right? So it's only a postulation. And that's even been postulated of the patriarchs in Genesis, that people have tried to make that claim. But there's no foundation for it. It's only an extrapolation from somebody not being able to imagine how somebody could live that long. So they made up a story to try to make it fit. There's no evidence. There's no evidence supporting it.
I can see the thousand years because you can see degradation in what's happened on the earth.
I understand that.
28,000 years or 56,000 years.
Well, right, but that's what the texts say. And there's no indication from the texts themselves that they could mean anything else. And these people were the Sumerians, that the Sumerians were the developers of what we know as astrology, right? So, I mean, I should say astronomy. Their astrology was more like our astronomy than our astrology, right? But they did develop the study of the stars. They do know what a year was. And there's no indication that it could mean a reign of people, even though that proposition has quite often been made.
When they're claiming years, could somehow they would have said a season?
No, they know what a year was. It's very clear that they know what a year was.
A celestial season, in other words.
All right, well, I don't know enough about that, so I have to go back and revisit that, and I don't see anything
right.
Viable
but
about anybody.
That proposition's been made very often. That's all I'm trying to say. By people that scoff at the durations of time on the list. And all I would say is that, I'm not going to say that it's absolutely impossible. All I'm going to say is that there's no evidence that proves that postulation could be right.
All right, well, I got to get some work done, Bill, so I'm going to see if someone else picks up the ball here.
Yeah, if nobody else picks up the ball, I'm going to end the program. I mean, I'm going to read something that's going to take me about 3 minutes, and then I'm going to end the program if nobody picks up the ball. That's just the way it's got to be. An open forum program has to have participants, and I have to be able to rely on, I'm not putting down Muniker, but I'm glad he came to help out, but we need some action here if we want to have a longer program. That's just the way it is, people.
I could call upon my multiple personalities and...
Maybe you could do some instead for us.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to read this thing I wrote called Dead Giveaways on Zogbots.org. Yes, I wrote it. You know, there are certain elements of behavior which Christians generally find to be most repulsive, and that real Zogbots, real infiltrators, readily embrace. For instance, Christians do not run around persecuting their enemies. Those are the tactics of the ADL and the Jewish Internet Defense Force. Christians do not slander others with false accusations. Those are the tactics of the ADL and the JIDF. Christians do not spend countless hours in endless, vain arguments, annoying people with crazy theories that are rejected by everybody. Rather, Christians seek the truth through Scripture, and once they believe they found it, they can't be easily swayed through deceptive words and cunningly persuasive arguments. There are certain people that visit these forums, that come to talk to you, that constantly seek to cause division. Those people are not Christians. They are full of slander and blasphemy. They are quick to spread lies. They spend countless hours trolling forums where they are not invited, and they hide behind false identities and proxy servers to infiltrate and upset those with whom they do not agree. Those are the tactics of the ADL and the Jewish Internet Defense Force and other anti-Christian extremist groups. As we are told in the gospel, we know them by their fruits. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you, and good night.
You're there. Yeah.